This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. This is the time of year when thousands of students and their parents are thinking about colleges. They do the research, they make campus visits, and then send in applications. Actually, most of the applications have been sent in by now, but it's an important and expensive decision, and one that can be both bewildering and intimidating. With so much at stake, you need to know what's important and what's not. You need to know what questions to ask, and you need to find a way to figure out which school fits you or your student and which would not be a good fit. To help local parents and students, Charlotte is the site of a huge college fair coming up on March 9th. Well, in advance of that, however, we have invited two college admissions experts to join us to share their wisdom on the subject. Lee Bierer is an independent college counselor who writes the Charlotte Observer's weekly Countdown to College column, which also appears nationally in newspapers around the country. Welcome back.
Well,
let me turn your mic on. Nice to have you here. Go ahead. Sneak.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great. And Greg Zeiser is actually working in the trenches. He is vice president of admissions and financial planning for Elon University. He knows a lot about the process and even more about Elon because he arrived there in 1986 as a freshman and never left, except, of course, to do this program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. At what point in a student's high school career should they really start, and their parents, start actively looking at colleges, thinking about colleges?
I think it makes good sense to start as early as sophomore year is a great time.
Really?
Families even start younger when the students are younger. If they're going with perhaps an older sibling, so if you've got an 11th grader, they might have also have a 9th grader. So families start the process, and I do think it is is often a family process where they would go and visit the campuses together. But that's a great time. Sophomore year is a wonderful time because it does reduce the stress because you can visit a variety of colleges over a period of time.
And if you're thinking about or you want your child to go to let's just say a prestigious university, mm-hmm. as opposed to a state school, let's just say they want to go to Yale or Harvard,
sure.
Do you start earlier? Because obviously you're not getting into Yale or Harvard or Princeton unless your GPA is really high and you meet some of the criteria that they may attach to that other than grades. So do you have to begin that process or the thinking process for that even earlier?
I think thinking about what needs to be done over a period of time certainly makes good sense for all students. But if a student is anticipating applying to some of the more selective schools, they need to be thinking about their extracurricular activities, their leadership commitments, their community service, what are they doing over their summers, things like that.
Back in the Pleistocene era when I went to college and went to high school, we had high school counselors who we would sit down with. I remember sitting down with one a couple of times who would go over your grades and talk about the future and talk about colleges that you might want to be thinking about and what was reasonable to think about given your aptitude and your transcript and what wasn't. Does that still happen? And have you found that high school counselors are good at that today?
High school counselors are inundated with other aspects of the work.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the ratio of counselors to students now is 500 students to one counselor, roughly.
Wow.
Across the country. So increasingly, high school guidance counselors have less time to do the college advising than they once did.
Wow. So would you say if they don't have time to do the kind of job perhaps when I was in high school, where do you turn?
Well, I think they are still very helpful, and we do our best, certainly at the college level, to educate counselors across the country and across the world about what's available, certainly at my institution. We all do this. But obviously, with the onset of the internet and increasingly students making the most of the campus visit experience, as Lee said, I think there are more resources available to them than there once were, and so I think those can complement what the counselor can do.
You know, particularly for people whose first child is going off to school, when you start looking, when you start thinking about this, what should you be aside from what it costs and how am I going to pay for this? What should you be thinking about? What should the considerations be?
I always talk to families about finding fit, as you mentioned in the intro. But we're talking about an academic fit for a student. We're talking about a social fit. And as you said, we're also talking about a financial fit. So trying to identify what the college offers that might be distinctive from what other college offers is really part of the due diligence. That's the responsibility of the student and the family to figure out if that school, in fact, offers the kinds of courses that they might be interested in. So back in the day, the majors were pretty standard: economics, philosophy, languages, and now they're all sorts of different kinds of video game design is a popular major. So things have evolved, and so understanding the academic fit is very important.
Do you think video game design is going to be a lasting major? Or is that a fly-by-night, flash-in-the-pan kind of thing?
Not really sure. It's not, and certainly not my area, but I'll tell you there's certainly a lot of interest in high school students for that major. Right. And right now, I guess there are jobs, you know, whether or not, you know, that's certainly going to determine the viability of that kind of a major.
Just from a school's point of view, and you've been at Elon for a long time because you started there as a freshman, what kind of student does well there? What kind of if they were looking, as you say, if you have to see whether it's a good fit, whether it's a good fit socially, academically, mm-hmm. monetarily, how would you describe the student that really fits in and does well at
sure.
your school?
Sure. I think the Elon student is one that really wants to invest their time in a lot of different ways. We pride ourselves in being an outstanding place for engaged or experiential learning. And students at Elon thrive when they're really invested in making connections with professors and participating in experiences that often in many cases we require, like study abroad or an internship, undergraduate research, where students are really taking the traditional classroom experience outside of the classroom because they complement one another.
Why did you choose to go there? Do you remember?
I do. It hasn't been that long. Back in the day, and still to this day, and Lee and I were discussing this just yesterday, Elon has an excellent program of communications. It's an accredited school of communications now, and at one point in my life, that was my future. And I think to some degree I use those
you
skills every day in admissions, so that's what drew me to Elon.
You say, Lee, that mm-hmm. you need to think of the kind of college environment that might suit you and that there is an assessment tool, the Sizing Yourself Up Survey, mm-hmm. to help. Talk about that.
Well, it's a self-assessment. So, again, going back to those sort of three fit factors of academic, social, and financial fit. But the social fit is more than geography or distance from home. And so it's really trying to understand what the social environment is at the school and do I feel like I'll fit in? So, which is why campus visits are so important. So when you walk on the campus or sort of trod the sod, as we say, getting out there and understanding that, you know, there's a lot of diversity, I'm really comfortable with that, or, you know, getting the vibe in the dining hall, walking in, seeing if you see people that look like you, is there a lot of activity, a lot of engagement by the students, are there tables where people are signing up for things? There are some students who are totally comfortable being independent, don't want to be bothered, want to be in a place where everybody's walking around with earbuds and nobody's talking to anybody else.
Yeah.
And that suits them. But really trying to understand that kind of fit is important.
We're going to talk about these on-site campus visits a little bit later on. But how valuable are the websites and the brochures that colleges print? I mean, this is marketing, and this is putting the college itself is doing these things, so they're putting themselves in the best light from their point of view. So how valuable should students and parents find these things?
I think the campus material is valuable, particularly if on the academics, the things where they're telling you this is what we offer, this is what it's like. But not every campus is with kids playing frisbee on the quad, and they all look gorgeous, and it's all a beautiful day, and all of that. So you have to take that with a grain of salt and understand what's not being said in the brochures. And there are an amazing websites out there that have student reviews that is certainly what I encourage my students to look for when they're trying to really evaluate whether or not the school
is a
good
fit. What are those websites? Give me a couple.
College Prowler, which actually recently just changed its name to collegeniche.com, but you can just still go to collegeprowler.com. Unigo is a wonderful site. Students Review is a great site as well. And these are places where you can go and you can actually filter by local atmosphere, by Greek life, by sports, and read what students have to say about a specific college in a specific area.
So when you are I know this is not your area of expertise, Greg, but when the college puts out a brochure or they start posting things on their website and try to make this image for themselves, do they do it from an honest point of view? Or are they just trying to get money in the door and butts in the seats?
No, I think absolutely it's from an honest point of view. What we want to do is provide information that will encourage a student to consider us. And it does no one any good mm-hmm. if you're falsifying information. So I actually spend a lot of time working on publications and view books and websites and that sort of thing.
Who should be doing the research as kids get ready to go off? When you're a sophomore and a junior in high school, who should be doing the research, you the student or you the parent or a combination of the two?
Oh, I definitely think it's the student's responsibility. I think parents should empower their students to have the students do it themselves. I mean, this is their college education. It may be the parents' investment. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely, if the student isn't invested in the research part of the process, they may not be invested in staying at the school and really following through. So I'm really clear about that one.
I would agree. I think that, ultimately by the time the student applies for admission, we're communicating with that student, not necessarily the family. So getting that started early as, sophomore, juniors, inquiring, making contacts with the university or the college directly, I think is really important.
But if you haven't been to any colleges yet in the process, you haven't visited any campuses, how do you even know where to begin? How do you know why would you go to the Michigan State website or University of Virginia website or UNC Charlotte website? Why would you do that? How do you know how to start and where to start?
Well, you can usually start with what I call a list called the usual suspects. Okay, so if you're in the Charlotte area, you might have a couple of state schools. You might want to visit Elon, maybe Wake Forest, perhaps University of South Carolina might be on there. And then there are actually college guidebooks that have an area that are called overlaps. So students who look at this college also look at these colleges in addition. So that
it's like Amazon.com.
Yeah, it is. It actually is. It's quite similar. Yeah. So but it can be very helpful because it might introduce a student to a college they had not considered previously.
And I know you do this with students independently. You're an mm-hmm. independent sure. college counselor, so people actually hire you to help with this process. But if somebody is not doing that, are there people at our college counselors at the high school level, the kind of people that you would go to who would kind of point you in the right direction and also point you away from things that because of their experience, they know this is not a good thing for you even to bother to look at because you're not going there. You're not getting in there.
I think so. Absolutely. I mean, the high school counselor is still an incredibly important piece of this puzzle, and they're going to be knowledgeable enough to be able to talk about students that they've known who've gone to one school or to another, and they know a student well enough to say maybe this isn't a fit for you, whether it's academic or social or what are the parameters you're working with in terms of finances. So without doubt,
we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about how big a role affordability plays in all of this, because maybe you really do want to go and you could get into a great school, but it's $50,000 a year or whatever it is. Should you just write that off the list if that's not a possibility? We're going to come right back and get an answer to that question and many others with Lee Bierer and Greg Zeiser. Greg is from Elon. Lee Bierer is the syndicated columnist in the Charlotte Observer. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Boatsman Gilmore Wagner, offering accounting, tax, and financial advisory services for local businesses. With offices in the Charlotte and Huntersville Lake Norman areas, BoatsmanGilmoreWagner.com. Well, vacuum the red carpet. or maybe squeegee it, because it's supposed to be raining heavily in Los Angeles at Oscar time on Sunday night. But the 86th Annual Academy Awards is coming up on Sunday night. Hollywood capping off their year, their season of awards with the Oscars. And we're going to handicap them ourselves. Every year we've been doing this with our trio of movie critics. Anne-Marie Oliva from Arts a la Mode, Matt Brunson from Creative Loafing, and Sean O'Connell from WCNC-TV and CinemaBlend.com. They will join us tomorrow. We'll look at who they think should win and who they say will win in all the major categories tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a coalition of consumers and healthcare groups is asking the FDA to revoke its approval of a powerful new opioid. Critics say the potential dangers of Zoahydro outweigh its value as a painkiller. Debate over use and abuse of the new drug.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about thinking about and applying to go to college and all the things that need to be considered. Some websites were mentioned in the last segment, including collegeniche.com and unigo.com, and Students Review. We'll put those websites up on ours at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. Lee Bierer is with us. She's an independent college counselor and a syndicated Charlotte Observer columnist who writes the Countdown to College column. Greg Zeiser is a vice president of admissions and financial planning with Elon University. I want to thank you for being in Charlotte for this conversation today. I'm amazed that you're actually in the studio with us.
Glad to be here.
Let's talk about financial viability, because you aim for the top and then work your way down. But if you have stars in your eyes and you really do have the academic credentials and whatever else it takes to get into a very expensive school, but your parents aren't wealthy, should you just not even go there? Or is there always money? You're in the financial planning area. Is there always money to be found for those students who academically qualify but don't necessarily have the financial means to go?
There is money to be found. I want to be careful not to say always, because every school is going to have different opportunities for families and for students in general. So I would say the thing I would want to point out first and foremost is that just don't discount a school based on its cost, because typically speaking, a school with a larger price tag may have more scholarships available, and certainly financial aid will be available to students.
But if you were to apply to the school of your dreams that costs a gazillion dollars and they let you in and you can't find the money, wouldn't that be crushing?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm fond of saying that really this is a conversation the family has to have early. Every year we get to a point where April, decision time is May 1st, and financial aid and scholarships have been distributed, and families will inquire about what else is available. And in some cases, unfortunately, they haven't had that conversation with their student up until that point. It's April before the May 1st national reply date, and then the disappointment sets in. So the earlier a family can start this conversation, be it in the sophomore year when they're starting the process to say, okay, here's where we are. We know this school is going to perhaps be a lot more than some of the other schools you're looking at. We need to be realistic about this. So we're going to have to be diligent about making sure we pay attention to scholarship deadlines, financial aid deadlines, and so forth.
Do parents get sticker shock? Because college is considerably more expensive than it was when I went there. So do they get sticker shock still? Or are they pretty aware when the kids start looking around in their sophomore, junior year of what this is going to end up costing?
I think there's a big variability in the awareness. I think there are families that are very aware of what it is, and it can be as high as $65,000 a year for many private schools across the country. But it can be as low as, $10,000 to $15,000 for an in-state, and that's tuition, room and board, and pizza. That's you're all in for something in that range. But I think families, as Greg said, they need to have the financial expectations discussion early on in the process. And I wrote a column that got quite a bit of interesting response about don't bait and switch your kid, which is don't tell them we'll figure it out later. Mm. and then have them apply to all these expensive schools and get in and not offer the family any money and then tell the student that they can't go there.
How much of this could be alleviated if, when the child is born, the parent begins a college fund and regularly puts money into that fund?
Certainly a big chunk of it, but as the price escalates at colleges, it's, you know, if you're looking at even $50,000 a year, you're looking at over a $200,000 investment per child.
Right.
And if you have more than one child, which most families
do. You have 18 years to get ready for it.
Right.
So compounding over 18 years, even if it's a small contribution every month or every year, it could help.
It's certainly what any financial advisor and anyone with common sense would recommend. Does it happen? I think sometimes it does. Not enough.
You talk about, Lee, creating a list of colleges with schools in three categories: reach, mm-hmm. target, and safety.
Mm-hmm.
Explain
yes.
that.
So your reach schools are the dream schools that if you are able to get in, you would love to go. So they're where you perhaps would envision yourself going if you're able to make the cut. Your target schools are schools that where you have a pretty decent chance of getting in. You sort of look at their academics, their test scores. You're in the range or above. And that's looking pretty solid. And your safety schools are ones where it's a slam dunk. You know you're getting in, and it may not necessarily be your first choice, but you certainly want to have it as an option.
What happens if you have to go to your safety school, and you really did want to go to your reach school for whatever the reason may be? Does that somehow mark you for life because it's a safety school? You graduated from the safety school. You didn't graduate from the reach school.
I don't think so. I think there's a bit of an art to identifying a safety school. So I think you want to make sure that the safety schools that are on your list are schools that you would like to go to, not that you have to go to because you didn't get in anywhere else. So that requires a little bit more research.
So many kids go to college not knowing what they want to major in. How do you choose a college, particularly when the price tag is so high in some cases? How do you choose a college or a university if you don't know what you want to major in? Because some colleges have, as you say, Elon has this excellent communications department. But if you don't know that you want to major in communications, why go there?
Right. Well, I think that's why you want to look at a school that has a lot to offer you. Because if you have no idea, and still many students, as you say, Mike, don't have any idea, you'll be taking a core curriculum that's going to challenge and expose you to things that you hadn't perhaps taken before, and it will generate interest on the part of the student to pursue coursework in a certain area. So I think the more opportunities, the more programmatic opportunities, majors a university has, the better for the student once they decide.
This, going off to college is a whole life change. It's a major step in life. It is not just going from junior high to high school. And a lot of kids want to go away to school. Some kids either want to or need to stay closer to home because that cuts the expenses considerably if you don't have to stay in the dorm. Some kids want to actually commute. Mm-hmm. Even though they don't want to, they could stay in the dorm. They'd rather commute and stay home with mom and dad and live in that nice house. How big a consideration should that be if you're the kind of student that would feel more comfortable, perhaps, going close to home so that you can come home on weekends and be with mom and dad and your friends? Should you push yourself to go away from school to school so that you cannot do that, so that safety net disappears?
I would recommend that students push themselves. I certainly want them to look outside the usual realm and what's immediately around them. And I do think it's a time of growth, and it is scary. It's intimidating, but I think that sometimes it's the parents who want them closer. Sometimes it surprises me because my kids weren't this way, but sometimes it's actually the kids who want to stay closer to home. So, but I do think it's a great opportunity for a kid to take a leap outside what they've been accustomed to and stretch themselves a little bit.
Kathy on Facebook writes, how critical are AP courses in admissions? My daughter is interested in top-tier NC schools, has taken all honors coursework, including high-level math and chemistry, and done well. But due to taking art and band each year, three or possibly 8 courses per year, has not really had the opportunity to take any AP courses yet, and she is a junior. How important?
I'm going to let Greg answer that.
You know, accelerated coursework is important increasingly. I mean, that's one of the biggest changes in the college process over time. With the growth in the AP and schools that offer the IB curriculum, depending on the schools that a student is applying to, they're going to be in a pool of applicants with a large number, potentially a large number of AP honors courses, in some cases IB. So the short answer is it's important. But I think you have to think about that in context. We have to look at schools and students based on what was available to them and their overall interests. Mm-hmm. So if an AP course is not available to a student, or if a student has taken other courses instead of AP courses because they have different interests, it's very contextual. That's what makes admissions so complex, because we're looking at a lot of students.
So the fact that her daughter took art and band in lieu of some AP opportunity, that shows what a wider interest and talents in other areas that would be maybe a complement to your school in some other way.
Art and band can be things that she has interest in and would like to pursue at the university level. I would say, what does the rest of her transcript look like? Yeah. Are there honors courses? Are there other AP courses?
You know, I remember doing a show like this years and years and years ago, and somebody, and I forgot who the guest was, but somebody said it used to be one way and now it's another way. And the two ways were this, that at one point, colleges wanted kids who were experts. They had become experts. They had taken all these advanced placement courses, and they wanted them to be a mile deep.
Right.
Whereas the other way was to be scattered all over the place, so you have an inch deep exposure to a lot of different things. You're involved in this extracurricular activity and that, and you went out in the community doing this, and you had this course that you took. Which is what a college is looking for today?
I think that was me a number of years ago. And I think what we talked about was being a well-rounded student versus an angular student. And the old metric was really that colleges wanted the well-rounded student, mm-hmm. The pep squad and being editor of the newspaper and all of those things. And now what colleges really are looking for is to, instead of the well-rounded student typically, they're looking to build a well-rounded class of what is sometimes referred to as angular individuals, so who have spike talents, who might be the president of the debate club, who might be extremely active in community service or have leadership roles or involved in the religious organizations or whatever it is. But showing that depth as opposed to the breadth is, I think, a very important concept.
You're nodding your head in agreement with that, Greg. Why the switch? Is that the way colleges are going?
I agree that it's somewhere in between what you just described, Mike. I think increasingly what we're looking for is students who have invested somewhere, both academically and outside the classroom, rather than, I often say, I'd rather see a student have done 3 or 4 things over 3 or 4 years of high school or beyond than 10 things for just 1 year. Because how much of an investment are they making? And I was actually at a conference on Tuesday of this week, and we talked a lot about sort of the impact of the co-curricular or extracurricular activities. We're seeing more and more students just sort of signing up for things as opposed to really investing over time. And to answer your question, I think we're seeing a lot more applicants each year, so we're trying to determine, you know, who's going to make a difference on the campus.
And she said that you wanted to have you were looking for it to assemble a class of students who.
Exactly. Right.
What does that mean?
Sure. We're building a community. The admissions world is really about building a community. So students who have, you know, been involved in band or performing arts, a student who's written a book, students who are committed to philanthropy. These are things that really make a campus interesting and thrive. And so we're looking for students who've done these kinds of things and a wide variety of other things, too, who will just, you know, add to the overall campus community.
Karen emails, I have learned a lot about the college admissions process from going through it with my son, who is a senior. I suspect the process will be a lot less bumpy with my daughter, who is a sophomore. Experience is the best teacher. The best advice I can give is to listen to your child. Don't just hear what they tell you, but go on the college trips, have conversations about college-related matters, majors, size, activities, intensity of atmosphere, etc., that are not necessarily directly posed in question form, such as, where do you want to go to college?
I think that's great. I think listening to your child and for the subtleties and the sort of nuances in the conversations and how they may evolve over time, they may declare that they want to be a certain career, biomedical technician or something like that when they're a sophomore, and things may change. And to understand what makes them work, are they going to be happier in a college environment where they're at the top of the class and they're a leader, or are they going to, and they might be intimidated at a more selective school where they're going to find themselves overwhelmed by all the valedictorians at this school?
I completely agree. Listening to your child, I have a sophomore son, and we've begun this process, so it's very personal for me, not just because of what I do, but we'll leave a campus, and I'll just listen to him, and I'm very surprised, and I think I know him very well, but his observations, his impressions are very telling.
Like what?
Well, they're just different than my impressions. He asked me one day, well, what did you think? I said, no, this is about you now. What did you think? And, he commented on the classrooms and the, of course, the fitness center and, the opportunities that he heard that were available at one place that weren't at another. Mm. And I just thought, okay, he's really picking up on some things are just, cues that are really appealing to
him. Let me ask you a question about something else. I don't think we've ever talked about it on this show. Yesterday we had a guest who wrote a book about the science of winning and losing. And one of the things she points out in that book is that boys tend not to do well at elite schools unless they are really among the elite. Because if they get lost in the crowd, they become very upset and depressed. Whereas girls don't seem to matter. They don't care if they're not one of the upper crust of the elite. They just kind of have another couple of women that friends that they fit in with, and they're fine. Is that just a prep school observation on her part, do you think? Or does the same thing happen in colleges? You don't know.
Maybe you can talk to it from a college perspective. I wouldn't know that.
Because guys don't like to disappear. They want to be.
Right. That's a good question. I don't know. I think fundamentally some of that goes back to the maturation process. Mm-hmm. I think boys do sort of have a different experience. But, I think we're generalizing too. There are, a lot of guys who are. A lot of boys who are highly successful and assimilate well and do just as well as their female counterparts. So, I think we got to be careful there.
Okay. There's a college fair coming to Charlotte. I said it was huge at the beginning of the show, and it kind of is. Are these new inventions, or have these things been around for a while, these college fairs?
I think they've been around for a long, long time. I think they've evolved, and they're different than they once were. But they're great opportunities for families to get some exposure. Certainly, collect literature and business cards.
So is this like the Southern Home and Garden Show for colleges?
Yes.
There are 100 to 200 colleges coming.
Right.
To
Everybody's
this
got a booth. They're all lined up.
Brochures.
Yeah.
And what happened? What can you glean from going to a place where a college has a booth and brochures? What can you glean about that experience?
I think you can, if you come prepared with your own agenda to say, these are a handful of schools that I'd like to meet the representative of from this school, then you can ask some specific questions about majors, about life on campus, about different opportunities, study abroad, internships. But otherwise, I think it's a great exposure.
Well, let's talk about how do you prepare for the college fair and how you prepare for school trips. And we'll do that when we come back out of the break at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the King's Kitchen restaurant in Uptown that donates 100% of its profits to feed the poor. Now open for breakfast that includes a complimentary cup of coffee through March 18th. KingsKitchen.org. Well, a coalition of consumers and healthcare groups is asking the Food and Drug Administration to revoke its approval of a powerful new opioid. Critics say the potential dangers of Zohydro outweigh its value as a painkiller. And guest host Elise Labatt and her guests debate the use and abuse of this new drug coming up at 10 o'clock in 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show. If you are thinking about going off to college and you have questions about the whole process of applying and visiting, etc., early admission, the best way to get to us is at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. And we're coming right back.
No spring pledge drive? You could make it happen. Once again, we're encouraging you to pledge early to take days off our on-air member campaign. Last fall, thanks to you, we were able to reduce the drive by almost half. Can you imagine doing away with even more days? It's possible when you contribute at WFAE.org. And you'll be entered in our giveaway for two to the Canadian Rockies. No pledges required, but we hope you will contribute today and help shorten the fund drive. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Greg Zeiser, who's Vice President of Admissions and Financial Planning at Elon University, and Lee Bierer, who is an independent college counselor, and the syndicated Charlotte Observer columnist who writes the Countdown to College column every week?
Every week.
Every week. This college fair that's coming on March the 9th with over 100 and close to 200 colleges and universities represented. How do you prepare for events like that? How do you prepare to go off on these campus visits? What do you have to do to get ready?
Well, two very different questions. So how to prepare for the college fair is really looking at the list of colleges that are going to be attending in your area, because it's not always the same group of colleges, and identifying which ones you definitely want to make a point of seeing, because it can be a little overwhelming to walk in and see rows and rows and rows of colleges all handing out literature. So having a game plan and then having very specific questions for the colleges that you do want to speak to is I think, a good idea.
This college fair will be where?
It's at Independence on East Independence, at the park on East Independence.
Which used to be the merchandise mark.
Correct.
100 years ago.
Yes.
And it's on March the 9th. It's free.
It is.
Who should go?
Oh, I'd say families with – it's free, so I say why not if you've got an 8th grader, 9th grader, 10th grader.
Oh, that early.
Yeah. Oh, sure, because it's exposure. You know, it's a great inexpensive way to sort of get some literature and find out what colleges are out there and what might be of interest. It's also a great way to sort of get the ball rolling for the younger student to even be thinking about the college admissions process.
Kelly emails, how do colleges feel about students doing a gap year before they attend school, Greg?
Sure. Increasingly, we're seeing students are inquiring about gap years. I think they're a great experience for students, for the right student. I mean, not every student is ready to take that leap from the high school experience to the college experience. So each school is going to handle that a little bit differently. But I think in terms of when a student comes to me and says, I'm thinking about a gap year, to me that says, okay, this student is really thinking about an experience.
Does it matter how they spend that gap year?
Yes, it does.
What should they be doing in that gap year?
Well, I think that a lot of the gap experiences are outside the United States. They can be service-oriented. They can be language-based. Students are learning a language. I think the most important thing is to talk with the university, the admissions office, to make sure that they're not doing something for credit that may not be compatible with what the university offers and it doesn't change their standing.
So they should have already picked and be accepted by the school before they do the gap year?
Yes. Those are the I remember I called a student once to tell her she had been admitted, and she said, that's great, I'm so excited, I want to do a gap year. So she had been thinking about it, and we talked about it, and I said, send me the information that you you're considering, and she sent it to me, and we approved it.
When should actual campus visits begin?
Again, I think you can start as early as freshman, sophomore year. Certainly the key time is spring break over junior year, so coming up shortly. but really allowing students 2 years to, so spring break of sophomore year is a great time to sort of do do a number of schools. Families also go over the summer, but I think most people would agree this spring break is a better time when school's in session.
How do you get a real feel for the school if you go over the summer or you go over spring break? When the college, it might also be on spring break, and there are no students on the quad. There's nobody in the dorms. There's nobody in the dining halls. How do you get a feel for what the school is all about?
Well, generally speaking, when it's spring break, most colleges, not every college has the same spring break. So you're likely to have most of the colleges you're visiting not on spring break. Since they get out considerably earlier, most schools than high schools, their spring break tends to be much earlier than most high schools. So it works out well.
And you say don't fall in love or hate a college because of your tour guide, especially if you don't click with your tour guide. You say don't allow them to have so much power over your opinions. Does that happen a lot? Who conducts these tours, students or faculty?
Students. So the campus visit is at a minimum a two-part process. So it's an information session led by an admissions official from the admissions office, and then a campus tour, which is typically led by a student ambassador or an employee of a student employee.
And where do your – when you conduct these, where do your student tour guides take the parents and the students who are – giving the school the once-over?
Throughout the campus, as many places as we can show them within an hour and 15 minutes.
If a student has a particular interest in your chemistry labs or your theater department or whatever it may be, do you make sure that they get to those places?
Absolutely. We try to pair prospective students with currently enrolled students who are majoring in the same thing that prospective student has interest in, or if it's not a major, then it's geography. But we try to make sure that the science student gets into the McMichael Science Center and so on.
You talked about your son and trying to get from him his impressions on his visits to college. And you mentioned that he was impressed in some cases by the physical facilities of the gym, et cetera, like things like that. What about other things, academic things? How do you know – if you've never been to college and you're a sophomore in high school, and how do you know what questions to ask, how to evaluate the professors or the academic atmosphere of a school? How do you know how to do that?
Well, I think to some extent that's one of the benefits of starting this process earlier, because so often what we'll see, particularly over spring break this year, is a lot of sophomores – juniors, fundamentally juniors, but a lot of sophomores who are just really starting this process. And so – They're asking themselves the same question. How do I differentiate one from another? So I think the first is impression. But if you have a specific interest, then asking the admissions official or the tour guide about their experience within the science area or within the performing arts area.
Are there specific times of the year or specific days of the week that colleges welcome these visits? Or do they try to do them when there are a bunch of students coming all at once? Or can you just call up and say, I have a day off next week and I want to bring my child up. Can I come? And do you have to call ahead?
No. Well, first off, most of it's done electronically. Okay, so
I'm so old.
But besides that, most schools, and you do need to sort of check on this on their websites, but most schools do offer tours Monday through Friday. Many schools offer them at specific times, typically sort of 10 and 2 with the tours, alternating times as well. But, a school like Elon is wonderful because they really encourage students to even sit in on a class. So they will actually publish on their website the days different classes are meeting, so you can coordinate sitting in on a class with your campus visit.
You also wrote a column, I think it was last week, called Try Practice Campus Visits Close to Home.
Yes.
And we have so many schools in and around this city and so many more within a two-hour drive.
Right.
You can really do this very inexpensively to get a feel for what it's like and to get to figure out what you need to know when you go to the school that you really have your eye on.
Exactly. And that's why I wrote that about visiting Davidson to sort of test drive a small private liberal arts school. So if you're thinking you'd like to go up north to a small private liberal arts school. Why not check out Davidson here, where it doesn't cost any money, you don't have to pay for flight and everything else, and take the time. And same thing with visiting University of South Carolina, flagship school, wonderful, wonderful college. But you may be interested in Ohio State or University, University of California, UCLA, or whatever it might be. Check it out before you venture further abroad.
I do want to add that because the number of campus visitors has increased over time, because we certainly encourage a campus visit, it's helpful to plan ahead. Sometimes, especially during the spring break and June and July months, visits can fill. Tours, are maxed out, and we want to provide the very best experience. So hopping online and hoping to be there on Thursday when it's Monday or Tuesday could be problematic. So a little advanced planning can make the experience that much more beneficial for the family.
Okay. Kelly, Bill emails, why should we put money into 529 plans? Those are the college savings plans. When financial aid is based on need, a healthy 529 plan is a negative in the aid evaluation process, no?
Well, I think that I still would contend that a 529 plan is a very valuable thing for the student. I mean, it represents good financial planning. I certainly understand her question, but I think
it's Bill actually. It's my
I'm
fault.
Sorry, Bill. Okay, but I think without that advanced planning, you're completely reliant on varying degrees of financial aid that are available at different schools.
And at different times.
And at different times. Yeah. Right, exactly. And, that's going to be dependent on cost and year and, in some cases, residency and so on and so forth. So I still think you have a tremendous asset in 529.
David emails, my son, who is a senior in Statesville, is dissatisfied with the ACT and SAT tests. He's told us that students are taking he has told us that students are talking about this at school, and it sounds very appealing and does to us parents as well. So what do your guests say and think about test optional schools, which I heard there was a news story about this not too long ago on the network. And can you mention some of the schools in North Carolina that are test optional?
Well, probably Wake Forest is certainly the most selective of the schools in the local area that are test optional. But there is a website, fairtest.org, where anyone can go, and there's an entire list of all of the, I think it's over 400 colleges nationwide that are test optional. The only issue I see with, I don't see any issue with test optional schools, but very rarely, actually, I've never had a student who only applied to test optional schools, which means they're probably going to need to take the test, the standardized test, the SAT or the ACT in some form.
Okay.
One or the other.
Kim emails, and we'll put that email address up on ours at wfae.org/CharlotteTalks by the end of the program. Kim emails, what consideration should students give, if at all, in the selection process to the school's ability to help get a student into an advanced degree down the road? For example, if a student is interested in becoming an MD, how does or should that play into their initial bachelor degree selection?
I think that's a great question, and naturally we spend a lot of time focusing on outcomes because, this is a huge investment. So we understand that families are looking for the next step. Increasingly, students are looking for, graduate programs. So I think asking those questions, and we talk a lot about that in our traditional campus visit. Where do our students go to graduate school? What are they studying to go onto certain programs, and where are they employed?
And you say that one of the things that you should make note of when you go to on these campus visits is to ask questions like, how difficult is it to get into your first choice of classes? How difficult is it to switch majors down the road if you decide, that's not really what I want to do, I want to do this? So these are important things to ask about. Will you get honest answers?
Oh, I think so. I think the colleges are very forthright about those kinds of issues.
What should high school juniors be doing right now? Well, let's begin with sophomores. What should sophomores be doing right now?
I'd love it if sophomore families actually talked about this spring break and thinking about visiting some campuses. The other area that I think they should spend some time on is thinking about what they're going to be doing this summer and trying to come up with something, follow their interests, follow their passion, get involved in something that is substantive. They don't need to do it for 11, 12 weeks of the summer, but if they're interested in writing, look into some summer writing programs that might work for them.
What about juniors?
Juniors, and also, sorry, one other thing for both sophomores and juniors is course selection for the following year. High school course selection. Understanding that the rigor of coursework, how competitive your course load is probably one of the most important factors involved in the admissions process. So understanding, so again, like that first writer that sent in about the number of AP courses. So you want to make sure you're sufficiently challenged, but that you're also successful. So putting together that mix of courses is actually really important. The other things, of course, are what I mentioned before, the what are they doing over their summer and then the spring break campus visits and test prep. And then at the end of the year, probably identifying teachers that they would ask for letters of recommendation.
And also not getting stressed out about college. Yeah. And a lot of kids, I suppose, do that. What's the secret to being interested and assertive and prepared for college and the campus visits and not being stressed out about the whole process?
I think having the family just have honest conversations about both financial expectations and college expectations is really just getting it out there as opposed to just sort of bottling it all up.
And you say seniors should be applying for scholarships, revisiting the colleges that they've already paid a visit to that they're really considering seriously, and not getting senioritis, which means laying back and say, well, I've got it made in the shade, and I don't have to work this year. What do colleges look for in an applicant? What are you looking for in that essay?
We're looking for an essay that's well-written, that is fairly sophisticated, but it doesn't have to be. Honestly, I think the best essays that I read are the ones that just don't try to overdo it. They're genuine. They speak to something that perhaps is a little bit different, whether a student has gone into business with their parent, or whether they've had an experience that is very unusual for a high school student. And if that student doesn't have that, just something that's honest about something that's important to them.
Okay. What about the importance of policing and cleaning up your social media pages?
It is so important. I'm really glad you mentioned that, because increasingly we find that social media is a problem. In fact, in some circumstances, we have had to rescind admission decisions because of what has been posted in social media. So I cannot stress that enough, that students need to be prudent about what they're posting.
Very quickly, how about students who have high SATs but mediocre GPAs? Is there hope?
There's hope, but it's a bit of a red flag, I think, for schools to think they're not necessarily applying themselves in school.
And Randy in Asheville emails, don't know if you've mentioned it, but kids will know whether a college is a good potential fit for them within the first 15 minutes or so of walking onto a college campus. Pay attention to that response. And you both agree with that?
Completely.
Absolutely.
Lee Bierer, a Countdown to College columnist at the Charlotte Observer. Greg Zeiser with Elon University.